BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, we're doing a lot of forward thinking on today's show. Did you pick that up in hour one? I'm not a look behind me kind of person. I'm look ahead. You don't look back, they might be gaining on you. Satchel Paige. This hour, we're going to take a real forward-facing approach with one of my favorite guests, Greg Biggins. You know why I like Greg Biggins? He's a normal person. There's too few normal people in the world. Biggins is a normal human being, well-adjusted, regular American guy. He's got a family, mows his own lawn, works, you know, I don't bring him on just because he works as a one of the premier voices covering college football recruiting. I bring him on because he's a fun guy to talk with. Easy going. Greg Biggins joining us live via satellite. How'd I do setting you up there?
Oh, my great, great intro. I do see myself as a regular guy. I don't think there's anything else you can add to that. Although I have to admit, I've never mowed a lawn in my life, unfortunately. One day I will, but I have yet to do it. So
I'm going to get you a push mower.
I'll take it. That'll take me to another level of regularness, I think.
Oh, regularness, yeah. Or is it more of a regular thing? Is it more of a regular thing to pay someone to mow your lawn? That might be more regular.
You know, see, I'm all about kind of helping, you know, helping the economy. And I have a great guy that I like a lot, and I'm just trying to support him and his endeavors. So there we go.
Do you, when the guy cuts your lawn, do you go out and inspect and watch him? Or do you hide hide and peek out the curtains and be like, oh, I'm not going to interrupt him. He's an artist out there working.
You know, so our regular dog, who's this little Yorkie, literally goes berserk. You would literally think someone was was trying to break into the house. So as soon as she hears the edger around our door, it's like she becomes Cujo. So, but I do converse. I do walk out there. I ask him how he's doing and say thank you. And I'm doing a great job, all that good stuff. I try to be an encourager.
I love it. Greg Biggins is with us. 24/7 Sports, national recruiting analyst. I really want to look, forward thinking here and just bounce a bunch of questions off you if you don't mind. But one of the things that comes up is, you know, in spring football, what coaches are always, you know, now they're talking about, oh, I don't want to have a spring game. I don't want to get poached. I don't want to do. Where are you on the idea of spring games from a recruiting standpoint and a roster building standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's really anything to gain from a recruiting standpoint in terms of if you're saying, hey, do you get a lot out of this, because it's very rarely an actual game. You know, it's more of a glorified scrimmage. You know, I get why it's fun for the fans. And if I'm being honest, I don't know if the game itself is going to feature players enough to where other teams would say, you know what, I want that guy. I mean, did you see those three plays? I feel like everyone already kind of has an idea of what a player can do. And I also think everyone kind of already has an idea if a player is going to go into the portal or not. And if someone said, hey, isn't that tampering? Nowadays, like, tampering is almost like, it's almost legal, right? There's so many ways around it. If you want a player, you don't talk to the player directly, but you have a guy and he talks to the player's guy. And that's why you see guys going to the portal. Then a day later, they're going somewhere, right? Cause they already have that idea of what they want to do. So I kind of enjoyed the whole spring game fan experience, you know, not out West as much. You know, one day I would love to go to, you know, a Nebraska or a Penn State where they really fill it in. But, I don't think it's real football. And because of that, I don't know if really all the talk about we're not going to have one because our players get poached from it, I don't know if I really buy into that one.
You know what I've been thinking is that the real reason they don't want to have the game is because it kind of signals to guys on your roster there's a pecking order and there's a depth chart. And they don't want guys to be like, oh, I'm the fourth string player at my position, I better get in the portal right now. Like maybe part of it is they don't want these guys to kind of know where they stand before they really get a chance to compete. I don't know, because
that makes way more sense. That makes way more sense because you do it. And again, I think just in terms of practice reps, I think you kind of have an idea if you're running with the ones or if, you know, if you're a third string, fourth string guy. I kind of think just the way spring ball kind of goes in terms of, okay, you know, I'm not getting, you know, out of running back, and I've only had three carries the whole spring. I'm probably not think I'm going to be the starter, right? I'm not going to be running back one when I see these other three or four guys ahead of me getting all the practice reps. But I think what you said nailed it. I think it does give those guys kind of even like black and white, man, I'm not a part of the future here, and maybe I should leave. And so, yeah, I think that makes a lot more sense than the whole, oh, they're going to watch the game, scout it, and decide to pick and choose who they want based on how they look in the spring game itself.
I noticed it when I do interviews with coaches, Greg, in the last couple of years. I will say, like, it's kind of a throwaway question, and I'll say, hey, who's looked good in practice? And they just freeze because they go, oh crap, I don't want to not name Joe McGee, who's the fourth string guy. And so they go, oh, I like the whole room. Instead of singling a guy out, they've kind of gone in general terms, and I go, oh, they're doing it because they don't want the players to go, hey, he didn't mention me. He didn't bring me up. I must not be part of it. And so, you know, they almost get like deer in the headlights when you ask that question.
Yeah, and even I think that's why a lot of teams, you know, they close spring practice, right? It's not because they don't want to be scouted. Yeah, that is part of it. But I also think it's they don't want these team sites or, you know, the reporters or newspaper, whoever's covering the practice, to be talking up these other guys so much to where the other guy who maybe isn't getting written up about, he kind of probably starts to feel a certain way. And I think that also kind of maybe leads to a few more portal entries just based off of the practice reports.
I want to just pepper you with a couple of schools, and you tell me kind of how they're trending or tracking. I'm very curious about Arizona State and Kenny Dillingham. Has he been able to capitalize on some of the enthusiasm from last season?
Yeah, no, I think so. You know, I think a lot of people from Oregon know Kenny well. He's a highly, highly enthusiastic guy, and so he was already, you know, whether they went to a playoff or won three or four games, man, he's always going to be high energy. So I think we found the way they closed out on 2025. They had a really good class. Ironically, I talked to someone who covers the team just today, and he said there's three or four of these freshmen that are already enrolled or like dudes, like they're doing really, really well. So I think right now it's early 2026, but you know, again, off the top of my head, I think they have like a top 20 class. You know, they have three or four guys, including a quarterback. That's always your headliner, right? But they have a Texas kid named Jake Fed. If they can hold on to him, obviously it's kind of hard to hold on to quarterbacks who aren't necessarily right in your region. But this kid can go, like really, really good quarterback. They have a couple really good players I like from Southern California as well. So early on, Sun Devils, I like what they're doing.
Give me Sacramento State. You know, I know they're trying to make a leap up. There's been a lot of talk about their investment in NIL and infrastructure. Are kids exploring Sac State, or is that something that comes down the line?
No, I think they are. You know, Brendan Marion is another guy who's high energy. He's always been an absolute dog when it comes to recruiting. When I say dog, I mean that as a term of endearment. You know, he is very similar to that young Kenny Dillingham with Dante Williams, that young, energetic, call it new believer zeal, whatever you want to call it. And, I mean, literally, like, I'll be honest, there's times I feel like it's a little bit over the top. I mean, they've offered just about every single player with a pulse right now, and so you're constantly – but that's kind of how it is right now. I mean, these kids, you kind of want – that's how you market your team. Whenever you see a player who's a high-level power four guy, even a guy who might be committed to a Bama, an Ohio State, a Texas, and all of a sudden you see them tweet out an offer from Colorado State, you're going, what in the world is Colorado State doing? Why are they trying to go after a guy who's already committed to Bama? Well, it's because – that's how they brand their program. I think that's what Sacramento State, you know, very aggressive, getting their name out there. And people are talking about Sacramento State for the first time in my lifetime, and I'm old. So I think for the first time there is some buzz, right? Especially, like I said, where I live, you know, Southern California, I mean, there's everybody's talking about it. They're getting a ton of guys on campus, again, for the first time ever. Brennan has, not just Brennan, but he's got a staff that's young, that's aggressive. A lot of these guys are former high school coaches that are very well connected. So are they going to go and win a head-to-head battle with Oregon or SC? No, I don't see that happening. But I think they're going to get that next player and just out-recruit the heck out of them. And I think nowadays with the portal, you have to recruit the high school kids really, really heavily, because if they do go somewhere and want to bounce back, you've already built that relationship with them. And, you know, you're going to be a great landing spot for some of these guys to go somewhere maybe a little higher level but don't pan out. Now all of a sudden they want to go play, like right now, Sac State could say, hey, remember us? We talked to you a lot. We offered you back in high school. We got a starting spot for you right now. And I think that's where you see that relationship building really matters.
Dan Lanning and the Ducks, you know, they go 13-0. They get boat raced in the Rose Bowl. It was real disappointing for them. How did they spin out of that? What does their recruiting trajectory look like to you?
Yeah, you know, that was disappointing because I really felt like those were the two best teams. And, you know, I felt it at the time, but then after you watched the rest of the bowl games and you saw Ohio State just kind of run through everybody, I literally felt like, you know, if Oregon plays anybody else, they're playing in the championship game. And so I think Ohio State, that was just one of those days, right? I was going to say nights, days. I think it was a day game. Just one of those days. But, you know, Oregon is always going to recruit well. You know, they have had a few players flip on them, right? They had a couple guys that actually went to USC. And that's another topic we can talk about later is kind of USC's early run right now. But, you know, it's still a top 10 class. They're involved with everybody. And one of the quarterbacks that they lost, disappointing, but they're, you know, heavily involved with a few other ones, including Jared Curtis, who's, you know, probably a top two, top three quarterback nationally. Oh, again, they have a machine set up. They know exactly what they're doing, and they still rallied, had a great class last year, and, you know, a top 10 class this year. I'll be shocked if it's not a top five class. So I want to say they finished number two. So for those saying, oh, that lost Ohio State's going to kill them, they had the number two class in the country last year, and they're going to have another top five class this year. So that loss to Ohio State did nothing to hurt them. And that's kind of how it is. I think people think too much about, oh, this one game. It's never about one game. It's still a relationship business. People say it's all about NIL. It is, but it's still a relationship business. And Oregon probably does a better job than almost anybody in terms of their coaches. They go 3-4 coaches per player, and they out-recruit everybody. And they do a great job, again, getting guys on campus. And do they have NIL? Obviously they do, but they do everything else right, and they still win games, and they have the best facilities in the country. So, like I said, it's a machine, and they're always going to do really, really well.
You brought up USC. Lincoln Riley, big year for him, big season for him. They're surrounding him with a lot of infrastructure. Chad Bowden comes in as his general manager. They've made some scouting and recruiting additions as part of that staff. How different does USC feel right now to you?
You know, it feels different. And I've been doing this almost 30 years. It just feels different. It kind of, not to use, you know, too much hyperbole, but it does kind of give some Pete Carroll vibes. And for those who don't remember, you know, USC was in the dumps before Pete came. And he wasn't even their top one, two, three choice. He was like their fifth option. They couldn't get a guy who wanted that job at the time. And then he just brought in all this enthusiasm. Obviously, Lincoln, they haven't had the last 2 years on the field a lot of success. But this year, it just feels different. And people will kind of push back and say, hey, USC, you know, they got off to a really good start last year. In terms of recruiting, big difference this year is it's all local kids. Last year, they went heavy in Georgia, heavy in Florida, had a couple of Texas guys committed. Those guys are always going to be hard to keep when the kind of proverbial crap starts to hit the fan, right? This year, it's almost all Southern California guys. These are guys that wanted to come to USC. Their parents wanted them to go to USC. And it's always a lot easier to keep those guys in the fold than a kid from Georgia. When you knew that all of a sudden, season kind of starts to turn, here comes Georgia, here comes Bama, you know, here comes Florida, you know, here comes Miami. You're not gonna keep that Georgia kid. But you can keep, I think, these Southern California kids. And I would say, and I'm not good at math, but I would bet 75 to 80% of their class this year is going to be Southern California kids. And I think it does help, and I think Chad Bowden has said this. He said this is probably the best year for California talent in the last 20 years. I don't know if I'm not sure about that, but I do think this year's class and next year's class, 26 and 27, California classes are probably the two best that I've seen. And I'll go last decade. I'm not going to say 20, but I will say at least the last decade. This year, California, next year, California, both really, really strong.
Let me ask you, who does that hurt if the kids at Modern Day are picking USC, if the kids at, you know, the Southern California schools are picking USC? Does there one program in general, or is it a handful of programs that have been cherry-picking that region?
Yeah, I would say it's everybody. I mean, obviously, Oregon was able to go and get whoever they wanted from Southern California. Stanford usually gets one or two. Notre Dame does a great job. Then you see those the national, the big brand national, Ohio State. They do have a commitment from Chris Henry, who's a Southern California kid now, who isn't originally from Southern California, but Ohio State is able to kind of pick and choose. Michigan is going to do well. You know, I think the obvious answer for some would be, what about UCLA? You know, again, UCLA is such a unique school in terms of how they recruit. And, you know, I see them being a little more aggressive this year. You know, Deshaun Foster you know, just I think that last year was just really just kind of trying to feel things out, trying to figure out, hey, what am I doing? How do I want to be different from Chip? But you're not going to see UCLA and USC go head-to-head on that many players. I think USC mm-hmm. kind of goes after a little bit of a higher player. UCLA will offer that guy, but they don't seem to be maybe as aggressive. And as soon as it becomes a battle between maybe UCLA and an Oregon, a USC, some of these national powers, they kind of dip out a little bit. Or maybe it's the player. Maybe the player kind of veers away from UCLA. So UCLA is going to recruit well. They're going to have a top 50 class probably every year. But it's going to be not those top 100 kids, not those high-level 4 or 5 guys. It's going to be that maybe that high-level 3-star who's really good. Hey, let's get him. Let's develop him. And obviously, you know, they had 5 guys that got invited to the combine, which means they'll probably have 5 guys drafted, which is a really good year for UCLA.
Craig Biggins, national recruiting analyst, 24/7 Sports, is our guest. Deegan Rose, 3-star quarterback out of Clovis High School in California. We've talked about him before. He made a verbal commitment to Oregon State. Report out today that Alabama's sniffing around him, some other people kind of, you know, who come in and, you know, I don't know if they're looking at him as a backup in their plans or a contingency plan, but it makes Oregon State fans nervous. What do you know about that process? And when schools like Alabama start sniffing around a 3-star quarterback who's got some upside?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're an Oregon State fan, you're always a little bit nervous, right? Boise State, it does such a good job. Oregon State, Boise State, I kind of put them together. Such a good job of evaluating guys and then going ahead and locking them in. And I think people know that. So when you see a kid committed to Oregon State, Boise State, Fresno State, I think you kind of know, okay, that's a football player, right? And then so if maybe you're in Alabama and you lost out on your top guy, you know, where am I going to pivot? Hey, let's look at this guy. And so I think if you're Oregon State, it's probably a little bit frustrating to almost feel like, hey, you know, we're kind of just holding on to these guys until someone bigger comes along, right? It's like we're being bullied by these other schools.
Right.
And I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I haven't talked to Deegan in a long time. I don't know what his certain situation is or if he's how strong he is at Oregon State or if he's, you know, on the verge of a flip. I don't know that. I do know this, and this isn't directly to Deegan, but I always say this, man. I go, I'll never give advice to a kid or a parent where they should go, but the grass isn't always greener, and it's not always about the biggest brand. Find the best fit where you can play, because I've seen so many times, man, these kids are committed to an Oregon State, Fresno State, SDSU, Boise State, else they get that big dream offer, and they go over there, and guess what happens? They never play, and they never see the field, because you are always a backup option for them, and guess what happens the following class? They're going to recruit right over you, because you're kind of more of a placeholder. They never really valued you. So I always say, man, if you find someone that loves you, like an Oregon State, if they love you and you know I can go there, I can play early, and I can get developed. I mean, the ultimate goal for all these kids, right, it's to play in the NFL. And you watch the NFL draft this month, you're going to see players from all kinds of colleges. It's not going to always be, you know, again, I keep saying, Bama, Texas, Ohio State. It's not going to just be those. You're going to see a lot of schools you never even heard of get players drafted. So don't always feel like you need to go to the big brand. Find where you can fit, where you have a coach that believes in you, where you can go play and develop, and you can still kind of fulfill all your dreams of NFL by being exactly where you're at right now.
Malik Murphy will start, presumably, for Oregon State. You got him $1.5 million.
Love
you love that kid. Why do you love him?
Oh, love him. So I met him as an 8th grader at a Steve Clarkson quarterback camp, and again, at that time, I said, hey, where are you going to school? He goes, I'm going to Sarah High School. I go, oh, you know, why'd you pick Sarah? You know, because I knew, you know, Mater Dei, Centennial, St. John Bosco, like all the big schools were after him. He goes, it's always been my dream to go to Sarah. Like that's, you know, I grew up watching, you know, Robert Woods and Dory Jackson. And so he went to go to Sarah. And it didn't work out great for him in terms of he was always either injured or he, you know, the offense just didn't fit him as well. Or one year there was, you know, some receiver issues. You know, I watched a couple of his games, and literally he had like 1 second to throw, a half a second to throw, and he's got 8 guys in his face. He's got receivers who couldn't catch. And Sarah's a great program, right? That's Robert Woods. That's Marquise Lee. That's Dory Jackson. They great tradition. They have more players drafted over the last 15 years than Mater Dei and Bosco combined. That's a big stat for you. But Malik was every offseason, hey, Malik's going to go transfer somewhere else. And I would ask him, he goes, dude, I'm staying right here. He goes, I'm loyal. He goes, I want to be at Sarah. I'm going to stay at Sarah. It's not always going to be tough. And then he's going to Texas. Well, all of a sudden you see Quinn Ewers reclassifying. Mm-hmm. Now he's in the same class as Malik. this is like a week before signing day. I go, Malik, you good? He goes, yeah, I'm staying with Texas. I want to go and compete. I'm not going to run away. I picked Texas for a reason. I say all this to say this. Like, Malik has always been that guy who just kind of did his own thing, and he never gave in to pressure to go transfer somewhere else. He never ran from competition. He's a phenomenal kid. I love the parents. He was raised the right way. And so he's one of those kids where it doesn't matter how well on the field he does, you root for him, right? There's always a guy every year you kind of just root for as a person, as a kid. That's Malik Murphy. So big time arm. I mean, he's got some serious juice in that arm. In some ways, he kind of reminds me a little bit of DJU, Obi Ogunleye, in terms of big arm, but needs to do the other little stuff better, right? Just processing the game quicker, fighting that third, fourth guy, maybe a little more pocket mobility, still that pressure. He's a pocket guy. He's not a dual threat. He's a pocket guy. But in terms of the arm strength and the ability to get the ball down the field, I mean, he's going to make some wow throws. And I think he definitely has an NFL ceiling for sure. So hopefully he goes and has a great year. And, the talent around him, they kind of elevate each other. And like I said, an easy guy to root for.
What does he do better than DJ? Because when you say that, I could hear Oregon State fans going, oh, no. Because they like DJ, they didn't love DJ.
Yeah. I love DJ, too. So I don't want to ever be in a position where I'm having to say something that is going to be construed as me, like, bashing DJ. I mean, I've always said this. DJ and Bryce Young were the two most humble five-star kids I've ever covered in my life. Yeah. Those two came out the same class. And so I don't want to ever say anything negative. So rather than that, I'll just kind of say, what does Malik do well? You know, I think he's got just a better overall quarterback feel, if you know what I'm saying. And I don't know people, what does that mean? What does quarterback feel? And it's like, I know you know what I'm saying. It's just, for being a quarterback, it's so much more than just quick release, great feet in the pocket, big arms. It's just anticipating the throw, just feeling when a guy is getting open, right? Some guys just have that quarterback sense of when a guy is going to break open and throw it a little bit earlier, just kind of get to the line and just being able to change the protection, you read a coverage, you change the play, and you make the throw. Like, this, that's all about what being a quarterback is all about. So I think Malik just has a better sense of that part of the game. We call it playing the position, right? It's called playing the position. It's not just about guys wide open and throwing the ball to him. Anybody can do that. But it's just read the defense. You have a second and a half, 2 seconds to really process everything, right? I've heard Aaron Rodgers say it really good. He said, you have 2.5 seconds. You're processing chaos the best you can. And if you don't already know where you're going to go with the ball pre-snap, good luck. So just have an idea, okay, where's the blitz coming from? Just all of that process and information. And I think Malik, you know, he's not great at it yet. He's good at it, but I think that gives him a little bit more of an advantage. I think that's what he does a little bit better. Arm strength is similar, but I think he plays the position from that standpoint maybe just a little bit better.
Let me ask you this, because I agree with you on DJ, because I know when he left Oregon State, you know, I happened to be outside Allegiant Stadium. Oregon was playing, I think it was the Pac-12 championship, or it was for the Pac-12 championship game. It wasn't Oregon. It was USC and Utah were playing. But DJ was just about to transfer to Florida State. He was in the portal. He was outside the stadium because he's there to support his brother, Mateo, right? And so he it must have been an Oregon game. So anyway, I'm outside the stadium. He could have hid from me. He could have said, oh, there's a media member. I don't feel like talking. I don't want to have to be quoted about where I'm going to school. Instead, he walked over and he shook my hand when he saw me and said hi. And just such a nice kid. Greg, you meet these kids when they're 14, 15, 16. How do you not root for all of them?
Yeah, no, I do. Honestly, that's why I don't have a team that I root for. You know, I don't have a football. I root for UCLA in basketball, but I don't root for anybody in football. Growing up, my parents were big SC guys, but you can't have a team now. Number one, you lose a little bit of professionalism. But number two, you root for kids. And, dude, DJ is that guy. I mean, he is the guy you want your daughter to date. I have three of them. And, like, DJ is that guy. Always been that guy. I'll never forget. Best high school game I've ever seen. I was actually calling the game for Valley Sports when they played Mater Dei, and they rallied and beat Bryce Young. And Mater Dei was number one, number two in the nation, number one, number two quarterback. And the first thing that DJ said when he was interviewed was, hey, Mater Dei was great, and Bryce Young, how great is that guy? He goes, but I'm so proud of my team. The first thing he said was praising Bryce Young. his rival. And I use quotes rival because they were such good friends and such, you know, really good kids. But that was always something with DJ. Just had time for everybody, always gracious, you know, kind of, you know, and that's how, honestly, Polynesians are very like that. Like, they're very unique people in that it's all about family and supporting one another. And you go to a Polynesian tailgate, and even if you don't know anybody, you're invited. You know, here's a plate. Let me serve you. Here's some mac salad. You know, it's very unique, and DJ just kind of like he exemplifies that.
Greg Biggins, I knew you were a man of the world. I appreciate you joining us. You root for all these kids. All right, go mow your lawn. I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on and sharing some of your expertise with
us. Always, man. Thanks for having me. You got it.
All right, there he goes, 24/7 sports. It's true. You don't think about it. He brings up Malik Moore, and he says, hey, I knew that kid at age 14. Biggins, you can tell, is a person. He's a normal person. It's the best thing I can say about him. And so he meets these kids at 14, 15, 16 years old. He sees their family dynamic. How does he not root for them to have success? And so when Malik Murphy ends up at Oregon State, how do you – I'm mixing my Dante Moore and Malik Murphy – how do you not root for those kids? How do you not have a dog in the fight, so to speak? Punch It Audio is coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll talk with Spencer McLaughlin. He is the host of the Locked On College Football podcast. We're going to be talking about college football because March is in the rearview mirror. Leave it here.